This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Lending Lines.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. There are 109 schools in California's community college system. Citibank has stopped lending to students at all of them. The New York Times says that's just one example of more big banks saying no to not only two-year colleges, but also for-profit universities and other schools that aren't very competitive. JPMorgan Chase, PNC, and SunTrust are among other banks cutting colleges throughout the country out of their lending class. Brits are teaching the Chinese a course in Private Equity 101. As Stephen Beard reports, London is seeking to pull ahead of New York in forging closer financial ties with Beijing.
With private equity deals drying up in the US and Europe, buyout firms have turned to the East. Many regard China as the next El Dorado. The UK is determined to get its share. The British Treasury has revealed it's been advising Beijing on how to regulate the private equity sector. Pure self-interest, say the analysts. London hopes to win more Chinese private equity business than New York. Martin Arnold is with the Financial Times. He says Britain is now better placed politically than the US to exploit the new market.
Particularly compared with the US, the British government is seen much less as a threat to China. The UK takes a much more low-key approach, more gentle, softly approach.
The growing financial ties between China and the UK will be underlined tomorrow. A major Asian economic conference holds its first overseas meeting in London. This is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We'd like to show you the door. That's essentially what the board at Wachovia had to say to CEO Ken Thompson. He's out this morning, the latest bank exec to go in the midst of the credit crisis. The Dow lost 8 points Friday to 12,638. The Nasdaq was up 14 points to 2522. The S&P 500 picked up a couple points to 1400. European shares are lower. Asian markets saw gains today. Oil dropped below $127 a barrel today. Solar power is often left out of the renewable energy equation because of its high cost. A supply bottleneck for silicon has been driving prices up for a long time. But now as production catches up, the industry is bracing for a glut. As Sam Eaton reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, that's good news for energy-conscious consumers.
On Tuesday, the world's largest manufacturer of silicon semiconductors will announce that it has doubled its capacity following a three-year, $1.5 billion expansion project. Announcements like these are forcing analysts to rethink their cost projections for solar power. The Prometheus Institute for Sustainable Development predicts global silicon capacity will triple by the end of the decade, driving down the price of solar panels by as much as 40%. Daniel Esty is a professor of environmental policy at Yale.
This is good news for all of us who might like to see cheaper solar panels. It's not so good news for the entrepreneurs and investors who are going to see much more difficult circumstances for these companies and probably less likelihood of getting a big return on their investment.
Esty says unless demand surges, the glut in silicon production will cause a shakeout in an industry that has seen record growth in recent years. But he says the companies that survive are likely to thrive over the long term. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Influential designer Yves Saint Laurent died last night at his home in Paris. The 71-year-old suffered from brain cancer. The YSL brand underlined the designer's statement on equality of the sexes changing the workplace in the late 60s. Vendeline Van Bredo covers luxury goods for The Economist.
His gift of fashion is really that he made it sort of respectable and indeed fashionable for women to wear trousers and to wear suits. And he designed clothes for working women, really.
Saint Laurent remade the tuxedo as a high fashion statement for women as well.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, working to reduce heart disease, the number one killer of American women, by supporting Women Heart. Information at womenheart.org. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation, online at kauffman.org.
For decades, tobacco was the crop of choice for small farmers in Kentucky. But despite growing demand for cigarettes overseas, many farmers have decided to turn their tobacco fields over to a vice of a different sort. From Louisville, Gabe Bullard explains.
At Felicia Vineyard in downtown Louisville, Jeff Tatman makes wine. He used to grow tobacco.
Last year I raised tobacco, and the prices were better then than they are right now. I made about 50 cents net per hour of my time involved.
Tatman stopped growing tobacco in the 90s, and many other farmers quit after 2004, when the federal government cut subsidies. Now, former tobacco growers are turning to a new, more profitable crop, wine grapes. The University of Kentucky is offering farmers technical assistance to turn their fields into vineyards. And although the numbers aren't huge, total acreage devoted to grapes is expected to hit 1,400 by 2015, more than double the current amount. One of the early wine pioneers was Jerry Kushner.
This is our operation. You see this 26, 27 acres of grapes.
Kentucky's climate is well suited for growing grapes, but Kushner and other local vintners have found consumers are skeptical of wine from a state better known for coal and horses. Kushner recalled one time a restaurant buyer took a bottle of his wine to the West Coast.
He took some of the wine out to California to have some people taste it out there, and they loved it, and because it was a blind tasting. And then when he showed them it came from Kentucky, they said, well, the wine was good, but it didn't come from Kentucky. So Kentucky has a tremendous image problem.
There is a lot of snobbery in wine.
Tyler Coleman teaches wine appreciation classes at New York University. He says good wine should overcome a few snobs.
If the quality is there in the glass, that should be enough to carry the day. In the case of Kentucky, if the wine's half as good as the bourbon, they'll be doing just fine.
But for Kentucky winemakers to sell their wares in other states, they need to go through a distributor, something new and small wineries may not be able to afford. Selling it at home is a problem, too. 54 of Kentucky's 120 counties are dry. In Louisville, I'm Gabe Bullard for Marketplace.
If you have tried Kentucky wine, let us know at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.